Parkcast, the UK's original theme park podcast.
Welcome back to Parkcast, park fans. We're a podcast for theme park fans, and we're here every week talking about goings-ons in the theme park industry. I'm Bex, this is Kev.
Hi, everyone.
And we're doing something a little bit different this week. We are joined by a couple of guests. One you will know, he's been on Parkcast quite a few times now, almost part of the furniture, aren't you, Mark? It's Mark Rosenzweig, our friend from the US. How are you doing?
I'm great. How are you tonight?
Not bad at all. And you brought with you one of your friends. Very nice of you to bring him along. Chris Robry, welcome to Parkcast.
Thank you. Thank you. Appreciate you. Yes, Mark dragged me in, but it's okay.
He needed some fresh content, Chris. So, I'm getting tired here.
Always about the fresh content. Yeah.
Listen, he's been shouldering the weight of the US roller coaster story.
That's why his shoulders are so broad. Okay.
We've basically been like getting him to talk to us about everything in the US. So yeah, it's nice to have you here as well. But you're both here for a very specific reason, because you are both members of the board of directors for what will be, or what is currently under construction, very exciting, the National Roller Coaster Museum and Archives. And you are both knee deep in this project, which is fascinating. And I'm so glad that you're doing this.
For Chris and myself, it's really an honor, because we are diehard fans of the industry. We have been since we were young kids. And now that we're professionals in the industry, both working for suppliers to the industry and the parks and operators, to be able to donate our time to this cause and get it across the finish line is, for me, it's one of the biggest thrills I've had in my 25-year career. So, I mean, really exciting.
Yeah, no, I can see that. And to be honest, I hadn't really thought about it, but it's kind of nuts, I think, that the US doesn't have this already. Like, I think I just would have assumed you'd have somewhere that is dedicated to theme park history and memorabilia, and it just doesn't
exist. So many famous roller coasters, so many famous theme parks. It surprises me.
Yeah, and what's the crazy part about it is that for the longest time, when a ride was retired, that's it. It was gone forever. You might have some parks that they would save a car or two, and they would put it up for Halloween as part of like a scrapyard, Halloween haunt type display or something like that. But yeah, for the most part, when the ride was gone, poof, that was it. It disappeared and never to be heard of again. So, the museum was founded with the idea of, no, this is an art form, much like a carousel and a piece of art. And we should be preserving it so that future generations can learn about what was a hydraulic launch coaster, or why was a Wildcat so significant to the industry, or why are the Matterhorn bobsleds so famous?
And I'll add to that, that the art form is the physical structure and ride that is the roller coaster, but it is also the memories that these rides create. So when you go to a legacy park and you ride a legacy ride like the Coney Island Cyclone or the Beast or Magnum XL 200, you go there these days and you're seeing grandparents riding with their kids. And these grandparents, were probably, in their 20s, 30s, they were much younger when they started riding these rides. So the memories carry through generations. And that's really, what our organization is trying to, really honor the industry by doing this.
Yeah, absolutely. Chris, just because you've not been on Parkcast before, what's your background? How did you get here? Are you just a nerd like us?
Yeah, first of all, what's up with that? Never been invited before? Just like, okay, this is how it is.
Apologies.
No. I started off as a park nerd like yourselves, and kind of followed the industry online, especially that first gen of the internet, rec.rollercoaster, etc., for all my old timers out there. And Mark's nodding his head. But what really got me in, I started working in the industry 2002, 2005, did a few things just with marketing stuff, kind of fell out of it for a while. Then I kind of caught the bug again in 2013. I started a YouTube series on old amusement parks that used to be in the San Francisco Bay Area. That took off. That led to the Legacy of Aero documentary that I worked on with the great Nicholas Laskowitz and Robert Engel, among many others. And then kind of just kept that going and recently finished the Legacy of Schwarzkopf documentary, which just got finished there a little while back. And now I'm in the industry again, slinging rides. It's a crazy existence, to be honest with you.
It's so cool. Nice, though. It's kind of the same with Mark, where you've started as fans and you've ended up working in the industry. Like, it's just the dream for so many people. And I know people who listen to podcasts would say the same, that you can do it. You know, you can just be a fan, a nerd, an enthusiast, and you can end up making a career out of it. So, it's something to bear in mind if you are listening to this thinking, oh, that can never be me. And that Arrow documentary, by the way, is great. If you haven't seen it already, if you have seen it, you'll recognize Chris's voice because he's the voiceover on it. But it is fantastic and it's really, really worth watching.
Well, thank you. I appreciate the compliment. Certainly pass that along to the rest of the team because it was a labor of love for sure. It was supposed to be a 30-minute TV show. That's all it was supposed to be. And as we were doing and writing the script, we realized, oh man, this is going to take a lot longer and this is going to require like a travel budget and we don't have any money because we live in California. So we got to find something. We got to figure something out.
Well, and I think
the biggest compliment to that was, and I think this was on an old interview of Dana Morgan, that Nicholas was on the interview, Chris, and he mentioned that Tony Baxter himself watched it and actually said, hey, have you guys seen that Arrow documentary? That's a really good film.
Wow.
And Tony is, to me, like my favorite all-time Imagineer. So, right, if he likes something, it could be a food. I'm all in. It doesn't matter. No, that's not to say the film's not great, but it is.
No. But it's to that credit, to that point. Robert Engel, who's one of the producers on The Legacy of Arrow, ran into Tony Baxter at Disney's California Adventure one time and just happened to have always had a copy of the DVD just in case, because you never knew.
Just up his sleeve.
It's amazing.
Yeah, he just had it up his sleeve. And Tony was talking to him about it and all of a sudden said, this Arrow documentary, and Robert lost his mind. Is like, are you kidding me? I worked on that film. So we got him the information, got him a copy of the DVD, and
I'd love to have been a fly on the wall at that point. Just like, what, the Arrow documentary? Oh, wait, hang on a second.
Yeah, hold on. Boom, there it is.
Just so anybody happens. Want a B&M documentary? I got more here.
Yeah, he was just a walking blockbuster, really.
I love that. Okay.
Amazing.
So the National Roller Coaster Museum and Archives, not just museum, where is it? This is really hard because it's not open yet to the public, but you are kind of facilitating some guided tours of it to like groups of, pre-booked people like Ace and stuff like that. Where is it, first of all, apart from America?
So it is in between Lubbock and Amarillo in West Texas. It's about a 5-hour drive out of Dallas, but conveniently located on Interstate 27. So, of course, that means absolutely nothing to you folks, but that's okay. and it's located right next to an RMC factory.
Oh, well, that is convenient.
Yes, nice. That works out very nicely for us because not only do they help building some of the exhibits and building the buildings, but also they understand how to handle these vehicles. This is not as simple as just pushing something around. These things weigh a ton. They're very dense and they can be very difficult to move. Ask me how I know. So it's great to have people there, professionals that understand how to move these things because they do need to get moved on occasion.
And I guess, from a nerd's point of view, you've got a great like view. Just pop your head up over the fence. It's like, oh, what are RMC doing over there? that's what I'd be doing anyway. Okay, how did it come about? Who kind of was like, right, enough of not having a museum. We need to kind of form some sort of cooperative and we need to get something off the ground.
So the history of the museum goes back decades. So when ACE was formed back in 1978, one of the things that they had always talked about was preservation and the possibility of having a museum. So that goes back really to ACE founder Richard Munch, who's still around with us and is ACE member number 001. So it's pretty awesome to see his card number. It's just one. So he's been talking about this for a long time. And then in 2009, we became just sort of a separate organization to sort of make it possible for us to get the construction going, pick a suitable location, and then start building the facility itself. And so we've been kind of slowly building as we can since 2009. We started with just the archive room, which is barely, I would say more than 15 by 4 meters, not very big. And now to the point that we're up to 20,000 square feet of space that we have. And we're rapidly running out of it. So we actually, we're ready to now start actually putting exhibits up and really making it from the warehouse that it is right now into an actual physical museum that you can walk through and learn about the subject.
Yeah. Right. And how does it work, Chris, in terms of, do you have to contact people or do they contact you? Do people donate like the trains for attractions and stuff? How does it work?
So that's usually how it goes, is that we will talk to a parker facility, for example, King De Ka. We were talking to the park for about 8 months before it finally got here and just seeing how things were going, if there was anything that might be coming up. And when that opportunity arose, we just said, okay, we will keep our mouths quiet. Every park that we talk to, we get a non-disclosure. Just it's a handshake NDA that says, we're not saying anything until you're ready to. And then just work on the logistics of, do we need to raise money for this? Would you be willing to donate the shipping for us? Because you're talking about anywhere up to like $5,000 per train to move these things.
Yeah.
And so it's a lot.
Yeah.
But for something like King De Ka, it was absolutely worth it. And we wanted to go to the fans just to sort of gauge their interest. And they came through in spades. Not only did they cover King De Ka's shipment, they covered La Vibora, which was the last Intamin Swiss Bob. They covered Time Warp at Canada's Wonderland because it was one of the most unique flyers out there. And they covered Nighthawk, which was out of Carowinds. And I had a personal connection to that one. That was the coaster that opened as Stealth at Great America back in the year 2000. And that was the first ride that really got me into the industry, was following that and being it built. So to see that train now literally in a museum in West Texas kind of blows your mind.
Do you ever go and sit in them?
You can't.
Because I'm just saying, else is there, I'm just going to sit in the car. Just,
yes, if you would lock back in the good old days, no one there to get you out, then what?
Like, exactly. Yeah.
You pull that the restraint on.
Now all of a sudden, Kev is the exhibit.
Yes. I will say, however, it's been kind of fun to learn, and all the ride ops who are watching and listening know, the manual way to open restraints. It's kind of fun to learn how to do that now. Especially when I'm doing the detailing of the trains before their portraits are taken.
Okay. Obviously, you've mentioned King De Ka there. So for anyone who doesn't know or hasn't heard, you guys have got the lead car from King De Ka with you in your possession. I mean, it's such an iconic thing, and it's something that we've all been talking about, you know, off and on over the last year or so, because the rumors of its demise were coming, and there was, is it staying? Is it going? And then the next thing we know, it was, you know, very sadly taken in front of our very own eyes. That must be a really special thing for you to be able to say, okay, we've got that.
Yeah. I mean, it's iconic, right? It's not every day you could say, hey, the world's former tallest roller coaster, we have one of the four lead cars in the collection. But really, you know, Bex and Chris, please add on to this, but the collection is so robust that, you know, for someone to really understand and comprehend what this is, you really need to visit the museum and see, you know, we're basically telling a story of the history of the roller coaster, whether it's by genre, you know, by park. You walk through, we have pieces from Disney parks. We've got, you know, historic pieces. We've got a lot of artifacts from Jazzland that became Six Flags New Orleans, the park that got unfortunately destroyed as a result of Hurricane Katrina. Loads of signs and a ride vehicle, off an All Chance Aviator flat ride. There's just so many, you know, it's hard to put into words, you know, unless, you know, when I first went there myself last year for the first time and Chris took me in, and I kind of needed an hour just to walk on my own and just start to absorb the scale of what this collection is. And if you are remotely interested, forget if you're a nerd like us, if you're even remotely interested in amusement parks as part of your childhood or your adulthood or memories, it's almost tear jerking. It gives you shivers, essentially.
It's really nostalgic, isn't it?
There's, you know, the best way that I found to describe it, and we've had many people have very emotional reactions, because the door that you walk into right now to start, the first thing you walk into is the Big Bad Wolf from Busch Gardens Williamsburg. Legendary attraction, right?
Yeah.
And it got a great send off too. So, but still, it's just sitting there right in front of you. The best way I can describe the when you walk into the museum is that it's like peeling an onion, because there are layers upon layers upon layers of history, and every time you peel it back, you're going to start crying just because out of nostalgia. I can count the number of cars walking around. I sat in that. I sat right there. Yeah. I sat in this. It's crazy to think.
Yeah. That must be a really weird thing, actually. In some ways, you're seeing the leftovers of what were people's memories, people's great days out, and they're now, you know, they're silent and they won't roll along a track ever again. And that's kind of like eerie in a way, I guess. Like I always find, you know, if you see like abandoned amusement parks and things like that online, I find them really eerie. It's almost like that. You've got this car that you know has delivered so much joy and so many smiles and screams and God knows what else to people. And now it's just sat here, and it is a museum piece now. There must be a weird feeling when you're looking at them.
There's another piece to it too, is that beyond, you know, that feeling, that nostalgia feeling, is that the story of this also tells the story of evolution of technology. Because even if, let's say, we're missing this specific ride, there may be the ride that came after it that took that technology and bumped it to the next level. So this is more like, oh yeah, remember how, you know, this is what influenced this design and then further design and on down the road. So it is, yes, you have the tear jerking side of it, that nostalgia piece, but also the wow, this is really cool. Like, we've got a bunch of old Wild Mouse cars. So if you go from like where we are today, if you look at a typical Mach Rides or Mauer Mouse, and then we've got some that, you know, you wouldn't even believe, like, how did people even ride in these? But you know, different times, right? So
restraint? The restraint was ripping onto the bar and saying, hang on.
my first time to Blackpool, I rode what is now the Nickelodeon Streak, when it was just a roller coaster, and it had these trains, these four bench cars that were like riding in a restraints. Sofa. They were very plush. Not even a seatbelt. Like
just a little half bar on the
just a grab bar. That was it.
Yeah.
It was actually more though than Wonderland's, right?
Yeah.
Wow.
Okay. Well, look. What is the plan for this? So it's not open for general admission at the moment, but I guess this is the big plan, isn't it? That's where you need this to get to. It's got to get to that point.
Correct. So we're at a point now where we've got just about all the vehicles that we would need to really display and fill out the building. But we're always still looking to make sure if there's anything else that we need to preserve, that we do that. And the next step after that is to finish out the electrical inside all the buildings rather, and then actually finish out the exhibits themselves so that they are presentable and they can be displayed. So it feels a lot more like a classic car museum. It just happens to be those classic cars, you know, were accelerating up to 60 miles an hour and with a bunch of people screaming and didn't have a roof.
Yeah, that's fine.
Yeah, it should be fine. So that's really where we stand. And I think that's where a lot of people have some confusion or maybe a misunderstanding about us, is that we're really trying to do everything we can, but it's difficult, like Mark had said earlier, being so niche. We like to think that, the amusement industry is super popular, and it is. Millions of people around the world go to visit, but we're the only ones that are actually doing anything to preserve the history. Yeah. What does that say versus going to a classic car museum where you can find those in just about every town?
Yeah. And I guess this is all, you know, you're volunteering your time to make this happen a lot. You know, this isn't your full-time job. This is something that you're doing, you know, you're all doing. And I guess other people on the board with you as well, because you really believe in it as a project and you want to make it happen.
No, we all believe in the mission, and we're going to get it across the finish line. And, you know, of course, there are naysayers in every walk of life. And unfortunately, there's false information in every walk of life as well. But Chris and I are here, you know, to say, you know, we're getting this across the finish line. We're, in fact, heading to Texas this upcoming weekend. We have an ACE event that we're hosting called Back to the Museum, where we're going to have a whole bunch, dozens and dozens of guests coming, many of whom have never visited the museum before. So again, that first impression when you finally get there and you see it and you absorb it and you come back, and then the word of mouth. So, you know, that's where we are, and we're really looking forward to it. So Yeah.
Well, I hope you can make it work. I'm sure you can. I know, you know, Mark, we've spoken so many times, and I know your dedication to the industry, and I'm sure Chris is just as passionate about you. You know, I know I can tell you both really, really believe in this, and you've already got it. Like, you've done the hard bit. Mm. You've got the stuff there. Yeah. It's just the little tinkering bits now.
And it's such a great idea as well. I know. So Drayton Manor are just celebrating their 70th anniversary, and they've set up a little museum. Mm-hmm. At their theme park, and it's so great. And I always keep thinking, why do we not have more of these kind of archives that we can, you know, go and see all these things? Because it's really interesting. And the Drayton Manor one it's just a pop-up one for the time being, but it's so good. And I think it's such a great idea that you guys are doing and leading. Because I remember when King Dakar closed, and I think the whole enthusiast world was kind of saddened by this historical ride. And I remember thinking, that's kind of like it. You know, yeah. Wouldn't it be great if there was some way of being able to preserve it somehow? So sure. I guess that's what you guys are doing.
And Kev, there are parks in the U.S. too that have done these pop-up museums. Worlds of Fun in Kansas City that we talked about on the last road trip. They had a pop-up museum that was fantastic. And the museum actually loaned the lead car from Orient Express, the Arrow looping coaster that was in that exhibit for that. And then Chris, it was for SeaWorld San Antonio. We loaned the log flume boat, the Arrow log flume boat, correct? For their pop-up
museum. Yeah, they had opened a new Intamin log flume. And so they wanted to bring the old log flume car back on display for a photo op. And we said, absolutely, we can loan that out.
Yeah.
Oh, fantastic. So,
you know, and that, you know, brings notoriety to the, you know, we get the publicity, you know, publicity is hard to get, you know, positive publicity, we'll say, but, you know, we're goodwill. We want this to happen. It will happen. We're passionate about it. And again, the end of the day, what is the goal of themed entertainment and amusement parks? It's to provide escapism. It's to provide memories and fun and thrills in a safe manner. And we want to preserve that. And that's what we're doing here. And
I mean, you mentioned you got Disney stuff as well. I mean, how easy to get hold of that? I can imagine that's quite
not. It is not easy.
Not easy
at all.
It's not easy.
It is never easy to acquire anything for the museum for the most part. But that's, again, part of the challenge. But also, and Mark will back me up on this too, it's part of the fun. It's almost like a treasure hunt trying to get these things in here. And, you know, King Dakar is a great example of that. But there's so many other stories that go along with not just the transit of these vehicles, but then the vehicles themselves that really does lend to their aura and their mystique.
Well, look, through the magic of technology, we are about to take a virtual tour through the museum. Now, for a lot of us in the UK, this is as close as we're going to get until it is open to the public. Before you do that, though, where's the best place that we can find out information about this? Do we find you online, social?
So the best place to check us out, yes, would be on the website, which is rollercoastermuseum.org. Or you can follow us on social media. Just look for National Roller Coaster Museum. We're on Facebook, X, Instagram, YouTube, and always try to update that as much as we can whenever we get new good content.
Okay, awesome. Well, look, if you're listening to this podcast, I already know you're a nerd. You're going to love all this kind of stuff. You're going to love seeing these old ride cars, roller coaster trains, and everything else that the guys have got there. So if you're not following those accounts already, make sure you are. Like I said, they've just taken possession of the King Dakar lead train. Who knows what they're going to get their hands on next? Mm. The suspense is killing me. Through the magic of technology, let's now go move through space and time and take ourselves to the National Roller Coaster Museum and Archives
Podcast.
Hi everyone, I'm Mark Rosenzweig.
And I'm Chris Roberry.
And welcome to the National Roller Coaster Museum and Archives here in beautiful Plainview, Texas. We're thrilled to take you on a quick tour of the various rooms we have here with all the artifacts. And Chris, I thought we'd start right here in the front, one of the most famous rides ever to grace the earth.
That would be the Big Bad Wolf indeed. Take a look, guys. Amazing aero development creation. Legendary at Busch Gardens, that's for sure, to this day. And Mark, do the restraints still work, by the way?
I think they do. You want to show them?
I think we should.
Okay,
let's go. To open up your aero suspended coaster, you just go ahead and push that thing right here. Here we go. 3, 2, 1. Push that down. Mark, can pull it up. All right, let it lock. Mark, give us that ASMR.
Slow-mo. There you go.
And then you just...
Okay, check. Big Bad Wolf. was one of the most critically acclaimed suspended coasters. It came from Arrow Development. Actually, this was Arrow Huss at that time. It operated at Busch Gardens Williamsburg from 1984 to 2009, and truly a legacy ride that everyone really misses. Although this year we're thrilled that the park reopened the new version of Big Bad Wolf, we still kind of miss the old. So we're really happy to have this piece here in the museum.
And then just behind us, you can see here, this is just some of the blueprints that we have in the museum. Just a small bit of them. It's crazy the amount of history that's in here. And if you want to talk about cool history, check this out. That is a Racing Togo Ultra Twister.
If you get to see it. There we go. Former exhibit that was used at IAPA Attractions Expo by Togo to illustrate the potential for the ride. Now we've got quite a few pieces from the former Six Flags New Orleans Jazzland Park, including Mr. Joker right here. And we have a few ride vehicles we'll show you as well. Over here is an old ride vehicle from Blazing Fury, which is the hybrid dark ride roller coaster at Dollywood in Pigeon Forge, Tennessee, which is still operating today. Lots of cool signage here. The Big Easy came from Six Flags New Orleans. That was the Ferris wheel there. We've got an old photo of the Rattler at Six Flags Fiesta Texas. All kinds of signage. We're almost a sign museum. I guess my shirt today is suitable. It's a sign museum in Cincinnati. This is a very cool piece. This is a boat from the Typhoon Sea Coaster, later called Skull Mountain, I believe it was, at Six Flags America in Largo, Maryland, an Intamin water ride that had forward and backward sections. We have over here, this is a seat from a Vekoma suspended looping coaster with the restraint, the Pontchartrain Flyer, the neon, very cool sign, and then we could show them the ride vehicle. It was a Chance Aviator, which is a modern take on the flying scooter that actually rises up a tower. Several still operate today, including Elitch Gardens in Denver and Dollywood. And then this is a cool piece over here. This is one of the, what was this called? The Buzz Lightyear
Astro Blasters?
Yep, at Disney Quest. So this is sort of a modern take on a bumper car that had it, the riders had the ability of shooting balls at other cars on the floor, I guess. So very, very cool piece.
You have a parachute there from the old parachute sky jump at Six Flags Over Texas. A very ornate Larson Loop vehicle here.
Arabian Nights.
And then behind the boat from Skull Mountain, this is kind of one of the more touching pieces in the entire collection. This is a sign from Six Flags New Orleans, both the map and then you can see the rides are temporarily closed. If you look carefully, you can see that watermark there. That's as high as the water was. We've mounted it back at the exact same position. So it's really a very tough, it's very sobering just to see, like, that's how much that hurricane really did wreck that facility, and it's one of the most poignant pieces, I think, in the entire collection.
Absolutely. And now we're on to room two. Chris, tell us what we've got here.
Well, first and foremost, you notice the giant cow here. That's the roller coaster. That came from Hershey Park. That's a joke. It wasn't an actual ride, although everyone keeps asking us if it was. That would be hilarious. If you remember Chang from Kentucky Kingdom, that's the sign for it right up there. And then that's the door to our archive room. It's where a lot of the climate-controlled stuff is, a lot of blueprints, etc. Yeah. Cool stuff like
that.
Now
we're looking back to
come around there.
This is a cool sign here from Kittyland, which was a family-owned park in the Chicagoland suburb of Melrose Park that had a small wooden coaster that happily still operates today at Six Flags Great America. And here we've got what looks like an Enterprise ride vehicle.
A Hoos Enterprise model specifically. So we don't have the one from Schwarzkopf yet, but we're hoping that those stick around and we don't get one. But if we do, we could have a second one there for that. Any Schwarzkopf fans, though, because we've got, this is the entire sign from Montezuma's Revenge right down here. And we can't wait to put this one back up there and with the rest of the Montezuma display. That's going to be a lot of fun. A lot of also very classic attractions here. That's a Chance Chaos car, if you remember that ride. That thing was a really interesting forces.
I operated the one at Michigan's Adventure the year I worked there. There was a lot of cleanup.
Yeah. And again, a lot of other very older vehicles, spare parts, and then other pieces that we're getting ready to actually put the exhibits up in the museum. If we continue over here, sorry, this is the best looking like scooter ride ever. It's smiling. Come on, look at that. It's crazy. Yeah. It's a Lusa Auto Scooter, and you can tell these things would hurt when they hit you because they're all metal.
They are the best. Go to Knoebels Amusement Resort to ride those.
We're not paid spokespeople.
No, we're not. We should be paid. You're correct.
This is a ride vehicle from Scenic at Willow Grove Park. Again, you notice the lack of restraints. This is Jackrabbit from Rocky Springs.
Look at the side there. Oh. This is a side friction ride. So this predates the upstop wheel. If you look down here,
It's just a side wheel, and it rode in kind of a wooden trough of sorts.
Think of it as a log flume without water.
Correct.
This is also a scenic railroad, and you can notice, again, no upstops on this. This used to be our oldest exhibit from 1918, but we'll see another one that's actually even older than that. Come right back here. Where are my Togo fans at? Because this is Shockwave from King's Dominion, and...
Chris, the 80s call, they want their stand-up car back.
Yeah, I know. And then we've also got the Shockwave sign, though, from Six Flags Great America right behind it. And then again, some more items, the neon from Megazef, which was at Six Flags New Orleans. And then the Big Bend, the first Schwarzkopf Speed Racer, which was at Six Flags over Texas.
Very cool.
Really cool. Yeah.
All right. Let's move on to room 3. And one of the newest additions to our collection right here from Canada's Wonderland in Vaughan, Ontario, Canada, Time Warp. This is a Zamperla Velari coaster that closed after last year's season. And the park was gracious to donate both this amazing sign and one of the ride vehicles, as you can see here.
And the switch track, which is in the track garden, too.
Oh, that's awesome. I just love that we have a track garden.
Yeah, just keep adding water and it keeps growing.
And then this here is the Rim Runner, which was an Aerodynamics shoot-the-shoot ride that operated inside of the Adventure Dome at Circus Circus in Las Vegas, Nevada, and the control panel. And then up top here, from Six Flags Great Adventure, this is one of the cabins from their Von Roll gondola, which sadly closed last year. And that came from the New York World's Fair in 1964 originally.
Oh, no, Mark, we've got a mouse problem.
Ugh, call the exterminator.
Seriously.
Okay.
Isn't that a mouse too?
That was a dad joke. That was okay. Terrible. Anyway, here's our wild mouse collection. So we've got all different types and sizes from different eras. Right here, this came from Adventure City in Buena Park, California, or right down the street from Knott's Berry Farm. This was a Miler mouse, and most of the group, we have a group coming here to the museum from American Coaster Enthusiasts tomorrow. We're all going to be up at Wonderland Park about an hour north of here in Amarillo riding their Miler mouse, which is one of the only two left in the world operating. And these are just a variety of different. And one of the things we really pride ourselves on here at the National Roller Coaster Museum and Archives is telling the story, showing the evolution of ride vehicles. So you can see both restraint and technology and just how these ride vehicles have developed over the years. We've got ride mouse cars here from the 50s, 60s, 70s, right on up to modern day. Up here, we've got a very cool balloon wheel vehicle that came from Six Flags New Orleans and looks like a roadrunner trying to sneak a free ride. Piece of a water slide here from Whitewater. I believe this was the one in Georgia.
It was one of the first water slides ever created. So yeah, we had the opportunity to get this donated. So we definitely did that.
And then over here, this is a log from the Texas Splashdown that operated at SeaWorld San Antonio. Very cool fact about this particular ride, it was a massive custom log flume. It also operated at a park called Boardwalk and Baseball in Haines City, Florida, prior to moving to Texas. Now we get high profile. So any Disney adults or Disney fans out here know the Disneyland Matterhorn bobsleds. The very first tubular steel track steel coaster that opened back in 1959. And this is one of the coaches that got retired. This was a part of the fleet that was introduced in the late 70s when they coupled the cars together and two guests could sit in each seat. They currently run rolling stock where each sled has three individual seats with seatbelt restraints. This more mirrors the original trains that ran on Space Mountain in Florida.
Bob Gurr called it date night seating.
Oh, I totally agree. And that's a big part of the amusement ride vehicle design philosophy. Rockin' California. This was an overlay to California Screamin' that ran, I believe it was about a decade ago, during certain times of year where they would change up the soundtrack on onboard audio and provide a different ride experience. And over here, Chris, you've got some emotional attachment here to this ride.
I do. This is Project Stealth, Stealth at Great America / Nighthawk / Borg Assimilator at Carowinds.
So the prototype Vekoma Flying Dutchman. And we were graciously donated to us by Six Flags, came from Carowinds, where it operated through about a year ago.
Mark, can you stand next to it to get it just a perspective?
Yeah, I mean, this thing's massive, obviously. It's 4 across seating. And then in the station before dispatch, these seats would basically tip back so that riders are laying on their back and dispatch in this position. So very unique ride.
And also really cool that you have this idea of a flying coaster, and then right next to it, you've got Time Warp. That also was another one. So there's only a third one, which is the B&Ms, and none of those have gone yet. So.
Right. And then up here, we've got the sign. This is one that I'm attached to. When I was 13 years old in 1989, the Great American Scream Machine at Six Flags Great Adventure debuted. At the time, was the tallest, fastest, longest steel looping coaster in the world, but I believe it was actually the tallest, fastest coaster of any type for about a month before Magnum XL 200 opened. Then we come over here. We have what you might call the original Banshee, but then became Mantis. We now have Banshee at Kings Island. Ginormous stand-up coaster, broke records for height, speed, and length for stand-up coasters in 1996 when it opened, and was later converted a few years back, about a decade back actually, to Rougarou. It's now a floorless coaster, and that's when we were able to obtain this lead car, zero car in front row. So it's a really cool piece and very cool. You can see the articulation and how flexible these trains are.
Yeah, we do actually get a lot of people that ask, oh, is it broken? Like, no, their B&M just wanted to show off how much this thing can turn. So they did that with their track display that they gave us. Thank you, B&M.
So talk about 1980s, talk about thrilling and funky, and you know, this is just like technology was exploding. The Gio Vannola Freefall. This was sold by Intamin. Many people think these rides are Intamin rides. They're actually fabricated by Gio Vannola and brokered by Intamin. And the seats resemble very much like those that were on the looping Starship rides, if you remember those same style of restraints and seats. This was the original drop ride. This hoisted guests up about 130 feet, and then they moved out of the lift shaft onto the track and then free fell down about 60 feet in an L-shaped pattern, and there was friction braking. So magnetic braking was not a thing yet in 1982 when this was introduced. So that was the way that the drop ride was introduced. Of course, later in the mid-90s, when the Giant Drop came out, magnetic braking was a thing, so we were able to do just a vertical up and down drop ride.
I think these things paid for themselves with the loose change that people lost.
Oh, I would say so. So now we've got two examples of Intamin bobsled coasters here. The one here came from Six Flags Over Texas. This was the last one to operate. It closed after last season, and or last year, because the park is open almost all year. This was La Vibora, originally called the Avalanche. And this was the original seating configuration in line. So up to two guests could sit in each seat with the simple lap restraint. And then over here, this is a piece of trough and a vehicle from Avalanche Run that later became Disaster Transport at Cedar Point in Ohio. And you can see the trains were made longer and wider because Cedar Point requested higher hourly capacity. This is a very cool piece to have the trough here just to show how dynamic this ride was. And really, in the 80s, it was one of the most important ride models that we saw.
It's also the heaviest exhibit we've gotten so far. Just nothing but steel. It's insane.
Yep.
And GoPro mount.
All right, let's move into the bar. Cheers. Whataburger. Here we are at the Buzz Bar at the National Roller Coaster Museum and Archives. It's a bar that was made out of reclaimed wood from a coaster. So the bar itself actually has wood that came from Mean Streak that was at Cedar Point in Sandusky, Ohio, that was converted by RMC into Steel Vengeance. But the coolest thing, I mean, look at these bar stools.
Do they still spin, Mark?
I don't know, do they?
A lot of really cool history here, all different types of woods used in different rides, historic and current. It's like peeling an onion. Different, all sorts of history just in this spot right there. And of course, you're in Texas, so you gotta get yourself some delicious Whataburger.
And it's happy hour somewhere.
Yep.
Always.
Especially here.
All right, and now we are in the Mark Moore wing of the National Roller Coaster Museum and Archives. Chris, let's take a look at what we got.
First thing up, Orient Express, classic aero multi-looper out of Worlds of Fun. Also one of the few that had an interlocking loop. However, it could never actually dual and do both at the same time, just the way that it was set up, but it was still a very cool element nonetheless. Moving right next door to Fire in the Hole at Silver Dollar City. Amazing ride. Recently was retired, but they actually rebuilt it as an RMC just recently. Really cool design.
And this was the sister, or Blazing Fury at Dollywood was a sister ride to this.
Correct. So now we actually have one of each there, which is really
cool.
Absolutely. An actual front car from Rattler at Fiesta Texas when it was running on the old Morgan trains. A bunch of chairs and some signs from some of our water park friends.
Well, that's Wet n Wild in Orlando, the world's the first modern day water park.
And so we actually have the original signage there and from the Black Hole, the Next Generation. Ooh. If we look up real here, you'll see almost complete car from Super Duper Looper at Hershey Park. This is the coolest thing about Hershey. We love you guys so much. Not only did they donate this entire car, the entire train to us, but they also did a complete rehabilitation on the train before it came here. You could pretty much grease this thing up and put it back on the main line tomorrow if you wanted to.
Let's do it.
I'd love to. It'd be great. This is an antique tilt-a-whirl model from the 1920s.
So when Sellner, who created Tilt-A-Whirl originally, would want to try to sell these rides, they would take this model out, and this thing actually is fully functional when it's plugged in. And let me tell you, though, do not stare too long at these dolls. They will steal your soul.
What if you don't have a soul?
Then that's why I'm okay. So this is a model that was created by a fan. It's not of any ride in particular, but it came out of Las Vegas. You can see how intricate and beautiful it is. This is our tallest display so far. The track you see up top was cut out of Texas Cyclone from Astroworld the night it closed in 2005. And then we put it on a flatbed and trucked it up here till we were ready for it.
Six Flags Astroworld.
Which unfortunately we lost almost 20 years ago, over 20 years ago now. That's a front car from Texas Giant, which was at Six Flags over Texas in Arlington. This is a car from original car from Comet at Hershey Park as well. We also have some very, very antique, some in better conditions than others. This is a Pryor and Church train from Jansen Beach in Portland, Oregon, donated by Matt Crowther at ACE. And it ran from 1928 to 1969, as you can see.
Looks like we can grease it up and just throw it on the
mainline. That's not quite the same. Versus this one, which was lovingly restored to by Dana Morgan of Morgan Manufacturing and Aero Development. This is from the Belmont Giant Dipper, which is celebrating its 100th anniversary this year. Starliner from Miracle Strip Amusement Park, which is sadly gone. An original car from Mr. Twister at Elitch Gardens. You can see that PTC branding on the side and that classic look of them. Continuing on over here, we have a display model of Thunderhead. A lot of people ask, well, Thunderhead's still around. How'd you have a car? This is an IAPA display model, and you can figure it's a display model because the restraints don't actually work. So it was just there for photo ops, and they had the Thunderhead put on top of it like that. We have a Morgan vehicle from Twisted Colossus at Magic Mountain, and I know what you're saying. That never ran Morgan's when it was Twisted Colossus. You're correct. It's a promo that they used. They took the old Colossus train and put this new cladding on it to make it look fun and special for them as they were promoting the new ride. Genuinely the greatest name ever in all of coasterdom, Zingo, which is Bell's
Amusement Park in Tulsa.
Great ride. This is also one of our largest exhibits that we have right over here as we continue forward. This is the original roller coaster car, and it was built by GCI, the actual track was, to modern spec and standard. So you could take this track and put it anywhere in the U.S. and it would be fine. But we put Roller Coaster up there, so it looks great. What a
This
great
is Roller Coaster from Idlewild in Ligonier, Pennsylvania, the original trains that were retired a few years back.
Right here we have a Ghoul Dark Ride vehicle and one of the three Schwarzkopf Wildcat cars that came to us from Cedar Point. Love the look of these.
I love the view of the Looper train right above it.
It's awesome, isn't it?
Yes.
So you also see a lot of tubes back here. These are all of the items that we're still working on archiving. Blueprints and otherwise. You can see there's quite a bit of work ahead of us. Joyland Park sign from Lubbock, which sadly closed a few years ago, but we're happy to preserve a piece of that, and we'll have that up on the wall here hopefully soon. If you went to Busch Gardens Tampa, remember Sand Serpent? Well, guess what? Here's one of the cars right here.
And this is an important ride vehicle because this was the prototype modern-day Wild Mouse car because it debuted originally in 1996 on what was called Wild Izzy at Busch Gardens Williamsburg. It was actually a ride themed after the Olympic mascot for the Atlanta 1996 Olympics. And then later they renamed it Wild Mouse. And when that park put in Curse of Dark Castle, the dark ride, they moved the ride to Tampa.
This is why we love Mark, because Mark knows all this stuff. All right, you look at this and you probably say, this looks like a zipper if you know that carnival ride. And the answer is, yeah, it kind of is. But this is what's known as the Sellner Swooper. So it's a Ferris wheel on steroids. And they only sold a couple of these because, as you can imagine, it's a little difficult to move something like this. But boy, I'd love to be able to see something
like
that.
Looks like it'd be difficult just to move the model.
It is very difficult to move the model. Ask me how I know. So this is the backside of Montezuma's Revenge. You can always tell it's the backside because it's got the funky little pieces here that Bob would come up against, and it would push the whole vehicle forward.
So this was a Schwarzkopf flywheel shuttle loop that operated at Knott's Berry Farm, opened in 1978. And it's currently closed for a refurbishment, but we have the original trains, which is great.
We also have the top of the loop. So yeah, they just got the loop back actually. So that's good to know that that's gonna continue. This is obviously a vehicle that's in a little bit more rough shape. This is one of our projects that we're working on, but this is Looping Star. And if you look really carefully, you can see the Looping Star paint there. This is the first looping portable roller coaster. And it still has the original Anton Schwarzkopf badging on it, which is just awesome to see. Because most of these got lost, they were popped off, they were stolen, or they just never got replaced after they got painted. This is the original painting of the ride, which is great. And we actually have photos of it operating at the State Fair of Texas like this.
All right, so moving right along here, we have the lead car here of what is the West Coaster that's on the Santa Monica Pier Pacific Park in Santa Monica, California. It got updated trains recently, and we were really happy to have gotten this added to the collection. This is one of the most iconic family coasters in the world, really, with its placement right on the beach, right on the pier. It's fantastic.
It's probably been seen in more TV shows and movies than any other coaster on Earth.
Absolutely. And then moving right along, one of the most iconic coasters and really the counterpart to the Big Bad Wolf. That was the original duo at Busch Gardens Williamsburg, the legendary. So this is another custom Arrow looping coaster. This was the first one to have those interlocking loops. And when this ride first opened, it ran three trains and it was timed out so that the trains could actually meet as one was going through the upper loop. The other, the one ahead of it was going through the lower loop. So a very cool concept. And the ride got new trains a few years back, and we were able to get this added to our collection.
Now, that's just a shell, though. That's not the actual, right. Like, the chassis. Everything else is not on that.
And then we come over here, and here we go. The Loop-de-Loop from National Lampoon's Vacation, I guess you can call it. Revolution, Six Flags Magic Mountain, the first of the Schwarzkopf custom looping speed racers. Has a track length, fortunately still operating, of right at 3,500 feet. And the loop was a major feature of the ride, but it wasn't the only part of the ride. It swoops and it dives and it curves all over the mountainside at Magic Mountain. Truly iconic ride, and still Southern California's first looping coaster. Our oldest vehicle we have, or one of our oldest vehicles, from Lakeside Park in Denver. This coaster, again, like some of the other vehicles we showed you, predate the upstop wheel, and really just a gorgeous ride reflective of a time that is long past us.
Although it does have a very rudimentary restraint system, which is very rare for this time, because most of them were just to grab the bar and hold on tight.
Yeah. And then moving over here, this is a coach from the City Jet at Gillian's Wonderland Pier. Unfortunately, that park closed last year, was its last season. This was a production model from Schwarzkopf. It was a smaller version of the jumbo jet, if you will, ran trains of two of these cars coupled together. And similar to some of the other ride vehicles we've showed you, these are designed for two guests to sit together. So very much a date ride. Then we move here. We have another Arrow looping lead coach. This came off of the Canopy Corkscrew, Salem, New Hampshire, and which was actually the second corkscrew coaster ever fabricated. It started out life at Old Chicago in Illinois inside of a shopping center, and then it went to the Alabama State Fairgrounds before landing at Canopy Lake, where it operated for many, many years in that gorgeous New Hampshire park. This is one of my favorite pieces. This is a lead coach from one of the trains of Volcano the Blast Coaster at King's Dominion. This was the first LSM-launched inverted coaster that had a full circuit. Riders would launch out of the station, curve out of the station, take the first launch, second launch. You would actually blast right out the top of the volcano, and then you perform four inversions and then dive back in. Absolutely fabulous ride. Dearly missed at the park, but we're very happy that we have it here in our collection.
That really was a blast. Like, that's not even a joke. It really was an incredible ride. So let's take a quick look behind us here. This is Eurosat, which I think many of you will recognize from Europa Park. God, this is such a pretty looking train. Oh my goodness, I'm so excited. Thank you so much to the Mach family. This is our first international donation that we received. And a lot of people ask us, do the restraints still work on some of these rides? And the answer is absolutely. Wait for it. Yeah.
There you go.
A little more.
And this is that ride is like Space Mountain if it was inside of Spaceship Earth.
And was themed after the Can-Can.
Yeah. Yes.
Perfect. It makes perfect sense. Why not?
Everything adds up.
Okay, where are my single rail fans at? So these are the two prototype seats that were used by Rocky Mountain Construction to test whether or not the single rail concept would work, which is why it seems a little more rudimentary than you would expect in the production model. So you could see just how they were figuring it out. It's really cool to have this here, and thanks to our friends at RMC, who are actually right next door, to help us out with that. This is one of those things, if you ever want to get buff working with coasters, buy yourself an eddy brake. So this is a magnetic dyna brake, and this is what a fin would look like. You see just how much effort it takes to pull that out. So this would be on the bottom of the car, and it would obviously come right through here. Let me show you just how hard it is.
Push.
I am pushing. You can see it's not very easy. So you can imagine having a whole row of these to do that. But you get a good workout, though. And, you know, I'm not the weakest guy, but either way. So, you know, I can see what you're looking at. Don't look just yet. Calm down. This is Dopey from Walt Disney World.
Happy.
Because Dopey, nobody wanted to ride Happy. Everyone wanted to ride Dopey. So you can see, again, just a simple dark ride, but really cool. I love the ornate detail that's on these things. Yeah. It's just the carvings, and, oh, man, it's really quite special.
And they added the third row for the Walt Disney World version of this. At Disneyland, it only has two rows, so they were able to up the capacity by a third.
Most definitely. All right, I'll step out of the way, because I know what you really want to see is right behind me. That is King Ka, formerly the world's tallest, fastest roller coaster. And it just arrived at the museum. If you haven't yet checked out our social media channels, please do to see the incredible story of how we were able to get this vehicle here. Big thanks to Teal Team 6 and all those members for helping us out. And a lot of people ask, well, okay, do the restraints work on this? And the answer is absolutely as well. Let me just loosen them up here real quick manually, and there it goes. Love the noise the hydraulic makes. I don't know if you can hear that. And then we can just put it back down and lock it back in. Okay, ready for dispatch. You can see just how this thing, by the way, weighs 3,500 pounds. This weighs more than most people's cars. And this is just one car, and there were five of them that this thing would launch with people in them. It's ridiculous. So we come to the final vehicle in the Mark Moore wing, which is Montezuma's Revenge. We saw the back of it, and now we're looking at the front of it. Again, legendary launch coaster from Knott's Berry Farm. I can remember actually sitting in this seat, which is really crazy. I remember sitting in this seat at King Ka. And again, do the restraints work? Oh, yeah. Just make sure I do this here. Push the side. Oh, love that sound.
Love it.
So great. So this is the big room, the Mark Moore Memorial Wing. This brings us up to 20,000 square feet now, which is incredible. And you can see just how many vehicles we have. And we're really excited to continue to work on this to get it to the point that it is a fully fledged museum where you can come and visit it. However, if you want to visit the museum, there's going to be several preview events coming in 2026, so you can plan your year around it. And we'd love to be able to have you out here and show you all these things in person, because there really is nothing else like it on Earth.
Hey, Chris, does the museum have a website?
Ah, funny you should ask, Mark. Yes, we do. You can visit us online at rollercoastermuseum.org or find us on social media on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and YouTube. You might even get to see me detail one of these cars.
How cool was that? I hope you enjoyed that. That was Mark and Chris from the National Roller Coaster Museum over in the US. It is fascinating what they're doing over there. Now look, the full video version of that tour is now up on our YouTube channel. So search Parkcast on YouTube. And if you want to see what they were talking about for yourself, and why wouldn't you? You can go and do that there. Like they said, if you want to find out more, rollercoastermuseum.org, look them up on social media. You'll find them there as well. And fingers crossed, some of us at least will be able to get over there and go and visit what they've done in the near future, because it really is incredible and amazing for us as theme park fans. I hope you enjoyed today's episode. If you did and you haven't already, do give us a subscribe so that you know whenever we release a future episode. And if you'd like to leave us a review, we always welcome them as well. Until next time, though, we've been Parkcast.
Parkcast. The UK's original theme park podcast.